and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show live from the UN. Chris, it's a Radio Row. Don't we love it?
We love Radio Row.
It's electric. It's exciting. It's the Stephanie Miller Show live from the UN. Why from the UN? I don't know, but I'm wearing a peace necklace. That's all it has to do with the UN. And that concludes the UN portion of the show. But I'm here with the fabulous Errol Lewis, progressive radio host here on my station in New York, WWRL AM 1600. Good morning, Errol.
How you doing? I'm the morning man, so I'm getting ready to go take a nap. We got here at 5 o'clock this morning. Good God almighty.
There'll be all kinds of hosts. You just had a progressive host, Turrets. Would you like to, while you were testing the microphone?
Yeah, I was just blurting out. Bill Press, Katrina Vandenhoeuvel, Ed Schultz,
yes,
Alan Colmes. Tom Hartman.
Yes. Everyone will be here, Chris.
Well, in all seriousness, I don't know how many of your stations also carry the big guy, but I'm going to be doing the last hour of the Ed Schultz show today.
Great. Oh, good. Good, yeah. Good, good. Yeah. It's a busy day. Mm-hmm. You know, we're here at the UN, and I did Ed's show last night on the TV with Bill Press.
So people don't think that we actually know each other. We actually work together. And we sort of get along, too.
This is the first time you've been on my show. I've been on your show here in New York.
That's true. We were waking you up when you were back in L.A., as a matter of fact.
Exactly.
Yes. Gotta love it.
But I tackled him, and here he is, Chris.
Because
otherwise we'd be talking to some expert on something or other.
These people are really, really cool. You look at their biographies. These guys, I mean,
yeah, it's like 17 pages, like a phone book.
Yeah, I mean, they list more countries than I've even heard of. You know, like why?
I didn't even know we have an ambassador there. Yeah, I didn't even know it was a country.
Exactly. Really?
A bunch of overachievers in one building. Great.
I mean, I'm there to talk with them about, like, you know, famine and war, and the guy's like, well, I was with the Secretary General in Brazil last week, and I'm wow.
You're like, oh, name dropper.
Yeah, well, not just I was last time I was in Brazil was like 1987, you know. they're this international civil service, pretty good government job.
So you disagree with former fake diplomat John Bolton that this building could lose several floors and be fine?
Oh, no. Well, actually, you know what? In all seriousness, New Yorkers in particular, you know, complain about the place all the time because the diplomats, they park on the sidewalk. They have no responsibilities whatsoever to obey our local laws. But what a wonderful place this is. Great art and the diplomats and the air conditioning.
That's my new goal in life, is to be able to park on the sidewalk in New York, Chris.
Hey, you know,
Mama having a little trouble with the logistics of New York.
Yeah, that's who's got the real power around here. Absolutely, absolutely.
So, Errol, the president's going down to the Gulf again today.
Yes.
What is the latest? It is like tool time on crack, isn't it? The giant garden shears worked, but the saw got stuck, and where are we now?
It's looking like what they have done overnight is working,
but
we won't get the full extent of how well it's working until later on today.
It's like a doctor going, oh, that's going to get a lot worse before it gets better. Because didn't it look worse yesterday? Like, oh, it worked. And you're like, wow, that looks bad. That's really gushing now.
Yeah. It's complete gibberish, folks. I mean, you know.
It's almost like we need to let your carotid artery bleed out first before we can. It's like.
I've been doing a whole thing on this guy, Thad Allen. Because he's a great authoritative voice, former commandant of the Coast Guard. And he's talking complete gibberish. With that authoritative voice.
Right.
Well, we're dealing with the lower marine package and the riser pipe and the containment cap, and we did a smooth cut. And you realize.
Sounds like a porn movie.
It's not necessarily right. Also, he's never heard any of these phrases, you know, before the moment he spoke them, and has no idea what they mean.
Yeah, we all speak oil industry now, don't we?
Top kill
didn't work, so the junk shot is coming. Yeah, we all sound
the
I don't know what the hell we're talking about.
Framostat's connected to the Johnson rod. We need a new Johnson rod.
We're all doing the hokey pokey.
Yeah, there you go.
So when is the giant condom going on, Chris? Sometime today, or?
Yes.
What's the deal?
It's going on sometime today.
Yeah, that's somebody's got to stop that gusher, Errol, or. There's going to be, my
favorite scenario was that hurricane season, which starts today, would whip this up into a flaming oil hurricane that would sweep throughout the southeast, and that would be the end
they
of the
They haven't even made
States.
That disaster movie yet. That's like several disaster movies.
How
colliding.
Cool would that be, though?
That's
right?
Like Perfect Storm meets Deep Impact meets Armageddon.
Meets Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, right?
Exactly. Errol Lewis whipping out the jokes here.
Can I just say that we're the only table that is actually laughing? This is a very serious
conclave. This is a very serious
conclave.
Let me straighten my tie here. You're right. You're right. Let me sit up a little straighter here. I got war and famine going on here, Stephanie.
Yeah, Carol, I'm sure I'm the only host here that was like, where do I plug in the fart sound effect machine? Chris, I've already gotten yelled at. Like, you're not taking guests. Why are you here? I'm like, I don't know.
Oh, you're not? You've been turning them away? They bring in, like, these
like,
powerful, worldly, wise people.
I'm like,
I don't do that
kind of show. I don't know while I'm here. The guy that owns the show is going to kill me for the life insurance money told me to.
Yeah, made you come.
He made me come. Is there supposed to be some higher purpose here? I don't know. I tell fart jokes.
Right.
What do you mean, why am I here?
So you came here for a blue T-shirt and maybe a little spicy tea or something,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. Yes. I'm hoping that there'll be a good buffet later.
Well, aren't there some cute guys here, Stephanie? I mean, some of these guys look like they might be rich, sons of
rich
despots.
Diplomats, yeah.
Where would I have to live? God knows, right?
Well,
in a country that you've never heard of.
Stephanie, if you marry one, you could get diplomatic immunity, and then you can break any law that you want.
Then I can park on the sidewalk.
Yeah, absolutely. You can slap the cops when they try and give you a ticket.
I have a new dream. I am getting out of here with a diplomatic parking pass if it kills me.
There you go. Yeah.
Come on over later tonight, baby. Just park on the sidewalk. You can park wherever you want. So, Errol, what's your take on the Obama administration's response to the oil spill? You've heard the criticism.
You know, people don't believe me when I say this, but I truly think that they are now just awakening to the reality that they are dealing with the equivalent of 18th century, Dutch East India traders, like just totally amoral global pirates who will talk to whatever despot they happen to be in front of, whether it's in the Belgian Congo or the 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, and just tell them whatever it is they need to hear, and then go about their business of making obscene profits.
Yeah.
And
I think we can let Tony Hayward keep speaking at press conferences as long as we put a patch and a parrot on him.
Well, it's true, though.
And a hook
and
make him say R.
I'll tell you, if you ever get a chance and you run into one of these guys, some of the older people who sort of know the culture of this business, they will tell you unbelievable stories of profiteering in Indonesia and cutting deals in Hong Kong and dealing with despots in Nigeria. And it's just the way they do business. They just don't have the same kind of standards, morality, and perspective that the rest of us have. And I think the White House, I think they got a little bit fooled by all of it, frankly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, Obama says yesterday he's furious. That's the problem. People want more of an anger management problem, apparently, in the president. They want, as I was saying, Bobcat Goldthwait in the White House, apparently. Just someone sputtering.
Yeah, I guess, but that wouldn't work either. I can tell you. In fact, I can tell you as an African-American male, I can tell you, you've got to keep this stuff under control. You know, you let a black man start getting mad, and people are going to say, the president's a thug. The president's crazy. The president... the president needs to... You know, I mean, seriously. I mean, you don't get to where he's gotten by lashing out and getting angry and getting mad. Next, people will start thinking he's Al Sharpton.
And then we get the angry black man. There we go. And then we're like suddenly, oh dear, I wanted the president to be angry, but now he looks like he wants to break into my house and steal my stereo.
Oh, well, exactly right.
Thurston,
exactly right.
Gather the children.
It's true. I mean, and he has conditioned himself to the point where the guy just will not let himself get mad. And God bless him, I mean, look, it works for me.
Yeah.
I want somebody who's going to react in a more mature way than I would. I'd be cursing. I'd be breaking FCC rules. I'd be smashing up furniture, firing people, slapping the press secretary. I just don't want me in that situation,
See, now, though, I have to say, because I'm an animal lover, that I'm seeing the pictures of the animals, now I thought I was pissed. But
yeah,
now,
those pelicans yesterday.
The pelican got me, and I don't even like pelicans. You know? I mean, I've never eaten pelican. I don't know anything about pelican, but I looked at this thing covered with crap, and you realize it probably was just trying to dive in the water and get a little fish, trying to do its business, and it comes up with all of this BP junk.
I know
that
I
the
know.
CEO was saying, "Oh, it's a very, very small spill."
I mean, that guy. How about that Tony Hayward guy? That's,
yeah, he's like, he wants his life back. I want my life back. Oh, you want your life back?
Yeah, we want
life
back. How about that?
Yeah.
I want my pelican back.
How about BP fire him? Then he could get his life back.
Yeah, really.
And did you see Haley Barbour compared small animals suffocating from oil to people covered in toothpaste? Oh, it's like a person. You know, if you have too much toothpaste on you,
What you need is somebody, ideally, say, I don't know, a radio show host, to take him down to the Gulf and dunk his fat butt in a little bit of this toothpaste and see how he likes it.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Where is he that he's seen people covered in toothpaste?
Yeah, because I think he was one of those bully older brothers like mine that used to, like, sit on his sister and, you know, make the toothpaste dribble down to her face and then suck it back up again as a form of torture.
Whoa, whoa.
Yeah. Just saying.
I was a little brother, man. They never tried that on me. Good Lord Almighty.
Errol Lewis, thanks for coming and hanging out with us. You can catch Errol every weekday, 6 to 9 a.m. on AM 1600 WWRL.
There you go. And errollewis.com. That's errollewis.com. Lots of stuff there.
I know from 6 to 9 a.m. it's nappy time for you, my friend.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Thanks for coming.
Yep. I'll go talk to some of these people. They're really important, Stephanie.
Yes, I see that. They look important.
They know all stuff.
Right.
I'll see you later.
All right. 19 minutes after the hour. Back with John Fugelsang in a telephone version of Fridays with Fugelsang next on the Stephanie Miller Show.
And?
I'm going to do that later is what I was going to do, Chris.
Okay.
Because I'm running late here.
Okay.
Thank you for asking.
Okay.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show live from the UN.
A perpetual motion machine, endlessly satisfying every human need.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show live from the UN. Why? We don't know.
We don't know.
20 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. All I know is that I'm engendering a great deal of hostility because I'm not taking any stuffy important guests. All right.
Oh, no.
Let's continue. But and it's loud, like a radio row normally is. John Fugelsang coming up in just a few minutes. Also, we have Christian Weller, economist extraordinaire, Laura Flanders, host of Grit TV, and Van Jones, formerly of the White House, green jobs guy.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's the guy that was forced out of the White House by all the right-wing talk show hosts.
Yes, by Glenn Beck.
Yes. For doing something about 9/11, you know, signing that 9/11 truth thing.
Yes, because he has questions about 9/11,
exactly.
Like many people do. He's a globally recognized award-winning pioneer in human rights and the clean energy economy. He's a best-selling author of the definitive book on green jobs, the green-collar economy. So that's why we had to have him out, because, you know, he might...
He might do something.
He might contribute something of great value to the... it might be a good time for someone that knows a lot about the environment, mightn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, well. Thanks, Glenn Beck.
Oh, God. And also with Christian Weller, the unemployment numbers came out this morning, and
yes.
They dropped 0.2 of a point, so that's good.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
So we can ask him about that.
We will break it down with economist Christian Weller.
Yeah.
I don't know why I said that.
Oh, boy.
All right. So with storms threatening to spread the Gulf oil slick to Florida's beaches, the White House announced the president will visit there today. It'll be his second trip in a week and the third visit in the 45 days since this happened. Rumor is he's going to see the spill closer than before, perhaps by boat, I guess, if the weather isn't too bad. Right, Chris?
Yeah. Yeah. He's getting more hands-on this time.
Yeah, get your face up in there like Rachel Maddow did yesterday. Just see her in her boat dipping her hand. Yikes. Yeah, that is that's journalism.
Yeah, I got to say the pictures of those pelicans have really nailed it home. I mean, they were just covered with oil and just really, really struggling. It was so sad.
I know. Well, you know me. I'm an animal lover extraordinaire, and that's when it's the animals, and it's like, oh.
Yep. And also, they're saying that the oil could tear down Louisiana's defenses against hurricanes because all this marshland and grassland protects the coast against the storm surges.
Right.
And if all of this grass dies, then Louisiana's not protected from storm surges. And as we know, New Orleans is built below sea level.
I know. Here is the president yesterday talking about BP.
My job is to make sure that they are being held accountable, that we get to the bottom of how this happened, that they are paying what they're supposed to be paying, that they cap this well. In terms of actually solving the problem, BP has particular expertise when it comes to capping the well. They've got the equipment that our Defense Department, first thing I asked was, do we have some equipment that they don't have? And they, along with other oil companies, have the best equipment, have the best technology to deal with the well at the bottom of the ocean.
Well, yeah.
He said he was furious about the situation, that BP has not moved fast enough to respond to the oil spill. He said on Larry King that BP has felt his anger, though he said venting and yelling at people won't solve the problem. I'm furious at this entire situation because this is an example where somebody didn't think through the consequences of their actions, is what the president said last night. Here he is once again yesterday.
BP caused this spill. We don't yet know exactly what happened, but whether it's a combination of human error, them cutting corners on safety, or a whole other variety of variables, they're responsible. So they've got to pick up the tab for the cleanup, the damages.
By the way, did you see this latest one, Chris? BP forced cleanup workers to sign a contract forbidding them from talking with the media?
Yeah, I saw that.
Other media outlets have been reporting BP has blocked them from photographing the dead animals and environmental degradation on the Gulf Coast as a result of the company's oil spill. One, I think it sounds like sort of a whistleblower contractor from BP, said that there was a lot of cover-up for BP. They specifically informed us that they don't want these pictures of the dead animals. They know the ocean will wipe away most of the evidence. Nice, right?
God.
Once again, as somebody said, right, leaving the criminals in charge of the crime scene, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like, let's just let Ted Bundy, he's the only one with the expertise to have to figure this out. Let's just let him handle this. He knows what he's doing.
Does BP understand that in this country we have freedom of the press, and so the press cannot be barred from taking pictures of animals that are being suffocated by the oil that they spilled?
Yeah, exactly. So this was the Haley Barbour thing I was talking about. So, you know, he's been pretty upbeat and zippy about the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
He's like, come fishing. Come fishing in Mississippi. The fish are hardly putting up a fight anymore. So he had to finally acknowledge, quote, this could turn out to be something catastrophic and terrible. Oh, thanks for coming a little late to the party, Haley. But after he visited one of the islands there yesterday and saw the oil that came ashore had been washed away by the storms, he returned to his positive spin, saying, I don't think the island was hurt one iota. He even downplayed concerns about animals being suffocated by the oil, comparing it to humans being covered in toothpaste. He said he described the oil as weathered, emulsified, caramel-colored mousse. It's a fluffy dessert topping, Chris. It's not anything bad.
It's still deadly, Haley.
It's like Ready Whip.
Oh, my God.
He literally said, like the food mousse. He said, once it gets to this stage, it's not poisonous. But if a small animal got coated enough with it, it could smother it. But if you got enough toothpaste on you, you couldn't breathe either. What?
But what the hell is
enough
he talking
about?
Enough
with the stupid analogies. As of June 2nd, by the way, there are 604 dead birds, 253 dead sea turtles, and 29 mammals, including dolphins. So it's also not just small animals.
Right, right.
All right, the president again yesterday.
What we've said is you're going to pay. You will coordinate BP with us. But ultimately, if we say that you need to deploy folks over there, or you need to compensate such and such here, or you need to... For example, most recently, helped to dredge up and create some barrier islands in some selective areas of Louisiana in accordance with some of the ideas that the state had down there, then you need to do it.
You know what? President Obama is getting out and finally being in front of this whole situation. I'm actually proud of him now.
Well, but you said it before. I don't think that he wasn't doing it,
right.
Chris. I think it was a PR problem.
Absolutely.
He was doing it. They just weren't publicizing every single thing that they were doing.
Right, and I think the people were really, really hungry for information on what the government was doing, and we weren't getting that information from the government. So, you know, he's giving out the information now. He's got everybody on top of it, and I'm feeling better about the situation.
Here's the other fun thing about doing a radio row is people don't seem to ever realize that you're broadcasting live and continually try to get your attention while you're talking.
Are they? Oh, boy. Who's,
it's fine.
well, we're breaking in 30 seconds, so.
Oh, good. Because I also don't have a clock here, which is another reason I love being on the road. All right. Speaking of which, Bill Press and I were on The Edge Show on MSNBC. I think, is that up in the YouTube section?
It certainly is.
Okay, and we will also, he and I will be winging to Asheville, North Carolina today. Mm-hmm. We will see you at the listener party tomorrow night in Asheville, North Carolina, so we're very excited about that.
It's time you learn the truth. My name is not Klaus. It's
Stephanie Miller.
And my job is to save the world.
Live from the UN, I'm here saving the world. It is the Stephanie Miller Show. You can call me Claus. I don't care. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. It's, you know, it's still Friday.
It's Hugo saying.
John Fugelsang could not clear security at the UN, so he's on the phone.
Yeah, it's very, very sad. Look, anybody who remembers the New York downtown party scene of limelight of the last decade knows that Ban Ki-moon and I have a very complicated history. I'm not going to say anything about alleged crystal meth rings. I'm just going to say I wasn't given a pass to come to the UN with you today.
Yes, apparently, for some mysterious reason. Hello, John Fugelsang.
Good morning. Hey, listen, we're getting a great collection together. We want to thank the executives of BP by buying them a free cruise on a flotilla to Palestine. So I hope you'll sign up for that. Give generously. Folks.
Yeah, you know me, John. You've been to visit my ginormous dogs, and once there's pictures of animals,
They've lost the people who do book reports demographic, and you know, it's horrible. It's unreal. And now you've got Sarah Palin coming out and blaming all this on environmentalists, which is just fantastic. That's like blaming smart people for Sarah Palin.
Yeah. I mean, you know, this is like the talking point, right, John? One person says it, and then, you know, I think Rush Limbaugh started it, right? That, oh, it's because the environmentalists won't let us drill in farther and blah, 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 and the Arctic wildlife. And you know, that's a bunch of crap. First of all, they drill where the oil is. This is where the oil is.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, look, this is supply and demand. It's going to keep on going on. And while it's very fun for us to make fun of BP and these evil incompetents, the fact is that this is our addiction. This is our oil addiction. And, you know, people are so outraged that this oil is polluting the Gulf when it's supposed to be processed, turned into gasoline so it can pollute the skies. This is really a sign. The internal combustion engine belongs left in the 20th century. And I'm hoping that maybe we'll get an electric car within 10 years because of this spill. I got to believe some good will come from it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Hey, Chris, one of the many delightful things about being on Radio Row is I can barely hear John Fugelsang. Is there any way to turn up?
He's turned up as far as he can go.
Oh, John, you're turned on as much as you possibly can be.
Oh, you have no idea. I'm so glad you can't hear anything I say now.
It sounds like pillow talk. It sounds like you're whispering to me. That's fine.
Well, we'll make it less libelous.
So BP has launched a new series of advertisements, John, to contain the damage to its reputation and stock price.
We're so sorry. Can we have our lives back?
Yeah, have you seen the TV advertisement that aired nationally this morning? BP CEO Tony Hayward promotes how his corporation is running the response to the environmental calamity that it caused. Their slogan, "We will get this done. We will make it right."
Yeah, by the next presidential election. BP has failed so many times now at stopping this. NBC's ready to offer them the 11:30 slot.
Hey!
Don't fail any more than that.
That's a joke by the Fugelsang. So BP on the hook, of course, for the billion-dollar cost, apparently still has some money to conduct the broad greenwashing campaign with the support of an army and lobbying and PR firms, and, of course, Dick Cheney's former press secretary.
Mm-hmm.
Hayward's recognition of BP's responsibility to keep you informed, of course, flies in the face of reality with its demonstrated willingness to misinform the public, lie to Congress, and restrict media access from the scene of the crime. But they'll probably have those ads with nice music, and there'll be more little, windmills and green, environmentally friendly-looking things.
Well, exactly, and this has been the new friendly face of the oil movement for the past 6 months. You know, the Chevron commercials. We're in the people business. You know, we're in the creating jobs business. We're in the creating drilling jobs to ruin your environment business. And they're all these oil companies are now selling solar and wind. Oh, and oil. You know oil. You like oil. And you know, they're not in solar and wind production, but you'll see Chevron's doing this and Exxon's doing this. They're all touting, you know, all the different kinds of energy we need, like solar, wind, and more oil.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, we have oil, too, just in case you're wondering.
Greenwashing is the perfect thing for it. They're trying to adopt the mantle of environmentalism while at the same time doing everything they can to betray the tenets of environmentalism.
Yep. Here is the president. He is finally going to turn green and split out of his shirt. Listen.
I am furious at this entire situation because this is an example of where somebody didn't think through the consequences of their actions, and it is imperiling not just a handful of people. This is imperiling an entire way of life and an entire region for potentially years.
I'm so sorry that he let himself fly off the handle like that.
Sorry you had to see that, everybody.
Everyone's complaining that Obama's not emoting enough about this, and it's really kind of sad. I mean, first off, you knew he was a Vulcan when you voted for him, but can you imagine if McCain was president right now?
Yeah.
He'd be coming out, he'd be screaming, he'd be hollering, he'd be raising his arms in the air, and he'd look like an exercise in helpless futility every minute of it.
Yeah.
Obama's keeping the cool, and we don't like it, but the people...
Well, you remember when he suspended his campaign to solve the financial crisis.
Oh, yeah, by going to D.C. and supporting the bailout, of course.
And then we're told that in the meeting, he actually said nothing. He really had nothing to contribute to the meeting that he called.
Well, you know, he was just trying to impress Bush. But, these are the people who defended Bush for sitting in a classroom when our country was under attack and doing nothing and sitting emotionless for 10 minutes who are now saying the president needs to do more and act more outraged by this. It's just not really true.
President Bush was not emotionless. He seemed like he had some feeling about the duty in his pants. He seemed like he had a vague sense of embarrassment about that.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Well, it made it all worthwhile for all the waterboarding he got to do and admit to.
Yo, by the way, yeah, how about that? He stands behind the torture of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, says he'd do it again to save lives, which I love this, because the more tape The Hague has, I think the better.
Well, unfortunately, this wasn't on tape. This was just corroborated by a room full of people. But, you know, folks, tell your right-wing friends and neighbors and coworkers, we sentenced Japanese generals to 15 years hard labor for waterboarding. It's been illegal. Reagan signed a ban on torture. It's not simulated drowning. It's a drowning. You just stop before the guy dies. Bush has now stepped in it so bad he's going to need to go out this weekend to get O'Doul's boarded.
Hey.
Don't you love it? Still that same cocky bring them on, smoke them out thing. He goes, yeah, we waterboarded Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. I'd do it again, save lives. So just to recall, for those of you that don't recall the not-so-fun facts, waterboarding Mohammed 183 times did not save any lives. In fact, Mohammed told U.S. military officials he gave false information to the CIA after withstanding torture. Additionally, a former special operations interrogator who worked in Iraq has stated waterboarding actually cost American lives. He said the number of U.S. soldiers who have died because of our torture policy will never be definitively known, but it's fair to say that it is close to the number of lives lost on 9/11.
Exactly. You've got to think about all the Muslims who are moderates, who are on the fence about jihad, and then they hear that America is torturing their own prisoners, and that made them go ahead and decide to join the jihad. I mean, they're taking shots at our soldiers because of corrupt policies like torture.
Right.
And there's
but,
nothing
I mean, it's
Christian
like people,
or American about it.
But it's like people have forgotten, John, that we already had the information. And if something is so effective, why would you have to do it 183 times, right?
Exactly. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed also holds the record. I wrote a screenplay about torture. He lasted 2 minutes 14 seconds, which is the CIA record for being able to withstand it. It didn't work on the guy. They kept doing it anyway, and they're bragging about how ineffectual they were, which, in a sense, at least Bush is being consistent.
Yeah, exactly. Robert Gibbs, White House press secretary. Let's go back to the oil spill for a minute.
We have a full investigation, and that's what the commission is going to look into, a regulatory framework that can ensure safe drilling. I think that's important. The president thought that was important. I think the citizens of the Gulf think that's important.
Well, then they'll stop giving waivers for more drilling. I mean, really,
yeah.
You know, they've given out so many safety waivers since this spew began. Obama's not going to be judged on this spill. He's going to be judged on how well he handles BP and holds them to account. That's what the re-election is going to be about.
Yeah, by the way, BP and Halliburton, as we speak, John, building high-powered legal teams with deep Department of Justice and White House ties, the companies are pursuing other means to defend themselves as well. Halliburton's campaign donations, we talked about this yesterday, of course, just oddly, coincidentally, John, spiked as it... last month was the busiest donation month for Halliburton. And oddly, 13 of the 14 contributions went to Republicans.
Shocking.
Huh.
Shocking.
What could they be concerned about, I wonder?
I just want to know how long it's going to be before we can turn BP and Halliburton against each other. I want the cage match.
Oh, yeah. We need Columbo.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man. Put them in a cage match. Make them fight it out with pool cues and salad forks. Put it on pay-per-view, and it'll pay for the cleanup in a day.
By the way, a Hill analysis found that primarily during the Bush administration, BP and other oil companies paid for dozens of trips and meals for officials from the Department of the Interior, the EPA, and the Department of Homeland Security. Of course, the agencies involved in the regulation of oil exploration and spill cleanup. I think, you know, the more we get into this, John, the more of this we're going to find. I mean, that first report is just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, we don't need big government. We need good government, and that includes independent oversight czars on corruption within every facet of the government.
I mean, we talked about about Haley Barbour and the ridiculous things he's been saying. You know, I think you should be, they should have be forced to disclose how much they've gotten from BP before they get to open their pie hole. You know, all these coastal governors, Haley Barbour got $1.8 million from BP for his campaign. He's obviously been aggressively downplaying the disaster. Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell traveled to a BP-funded conference in Houston to lobby aggressively to drill for oil and gas without delay. Rick Perry, who, of course, dismissed BP messages by calling it an act of God, he was at a trade association funded by BP in May.
You know, he seceded from reality a long time ago.
Yeah.
Hey! That's a joke about secession.
Secession.
Exactly.
Yes.
You know I can't really say that word. You know, oddly, when I'm drunk, I can say it. I don't know why.
But this is why you're doing the Lord's work, Stephanie Louise, by talking about these facts. And we've got to tell our Republican friends and loved ones and family and coworkers that these guys are bought and paid for by the oil industry. And if this isn't a way to yank your Republican friends out of the matrix, I don't know what it's going to take.
Yeah.
Sure, Sarah Palin actually growing horns and cloven hooves.
Yes. Back with more Fridays with Fuglesang live from the UN as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Welcome to the party barn. May we take your order? It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show live from the UN. Why? To make Michael Harrison, the king of Talkers Magazine, happy. That's why. It's Michael Harrison's radio world. The rest of us just live in it. Michael Harrison, everybody, from Talkers Magazine,
you're
the
terrible.
King.
Oh,
can you hear him?
The king of the UN. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
What a lovely introduction. I can't believe it. I have never been on the radio with you. This is an honor beyond anything I can imagine.
Honey, anybody in radio knows there is one golden rule of radio. You cannot suck up to Michael Harrison enough. Any article that you read about radio in any newspaper, magazine, anything on television, Chris, you ever see about radio, who's the only person they quote about radio?
Michael Harrison.
Michael Harrison of Talkers Magazine. And that's why you cannot suck up to Michael Harrison, who is the most talented, handsome, well-endowed man in the radio business.
Thank
Good
you.
Morning,
Thank
Michael.
You. Thank you. That's so kind of you. I appreciate that. Wow.
He is
wow, you
the
recognize
stuff of legend.
My Wow, it's so nice to be to be recognized.
May I just say one of the things that you were able to accomplish, getting a bunch of gutter snipes like talk radio hosts into a place as fancy as the UN.
Can you imagine?
How do you pull this off?
I mean, come on.
They listen to the radio?
Don't. They may be listening to this. Be careful.
We've already played fart sound effects. Go ahead. Do it for Michael. Embarrass him in front of all these stuffy UN. There we go. This is what we're bringing to the UN, Michael, because of you.
That's great. This is a cultural exchange.
Yes.
This is the,
yes.
The mingling of the molecules.
Yes, exactly.
An olfactory experience.
Exactly. Now, let's talk about talk radio in the oil spill is the kind of stuff we do, though, right?
Correct.
I mean, there's no other medium that can handle something that is so live and immediate like that and really, have a lot of time, unlike television, right, to talk about it.
No, and every topic ties to every other topic.
Right.
I mean, the oil spill ties to politics. It ties to the economy. It ties to ecology, global warming,
right.
Truthfulness in reporting,
right.
The relationship between big business and big government.
Right.
There's no end to it.
Right.
So,
for instance, and let me just bring it back to how one can better suck up to Michael Harrison if one is in radio.
Mm.
We're having this fancy UN guy on later that is a climate change guy, and he can talk a lot about the oil spill, which in turn will make Michael Harrison happy because I'm here at the UN. You see what I'm saying?
That's
so
right. That's right.
Comes
Everything comes back to Michael Harrison.
That's
this
my point.
I sound like an old Al Franken routine. Maybe I'll run for Senate.
Exactly.
The problem is Senator of what? You know.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, it does tie together, and I appreciate your kind words about me, but the fact of the matter is that I think this is good for talk radio to be involved in something like this. I mean, all these hosts from around the country talking about topics that they don't talk about
right.
on the radio.
Right. Well, you know, we've all had to become experts, and we suddenly are Schneider. Like, if you ever notice, like, any big story, suddenly we're all, like, Schneider from one day at a time. We're like, oh, yeah, the top kill's not going well, so we got to get in there with that junk shot thing. We're all, you know, I mean, talk radio is essentially pulling it out of your ass, don't you think? And yes. on topic after topic, we're suddenly like, oh, yeah.
What scares me is that pulling it out of your ass, that concept, I think that it goes on everywhere. I see. Yeah. This is mostly entertainment. It's info entertainment.
Right.
It's helpful.
Right.
And at least we talk about smart stuff.
Right.
But what about the people that are supposed to really be responsible? They're making it up, too.
Yeah. Well, when you go on TV, as we know, it's the same thing. It's pulling out of your ass just in shorter segments.
Yes.
You know, we're all TV pundits, too. And so when they ask you things, you don't know. You just need to figure out something to say to fill
that's right. it's
20
sort of
seconds.
Sound bites. Ass bites. It's a new term. Right. Extremely shallow made-up sound bites are ass bites.
Well, you know, Michael Harrison has coined, Chris, yet a new phrase that will now be repeated.
I hear that.
Because when Michael Harrison says something, then it enters the lexicon.
Yes.
Now, because you look at every media storyline has been wrong about politics, right? About the primary, about
everything
the presidential
is wrong.
Election. So, yeah, I mean, basically,
the only
we
thing
don't
that's
know.
Right is why it happened after it happened
right.
when you didn't know, and then they tell you why they didn't know.
Right.
So,
right.
Everything
right.
is wrong.
Right. For instance, the conservative talk radio, liberal radio, will never work. Liberal radio has failed, and I think we're talking, maybe we're not on the air, according to our right-wing friends. I'm pretty sure that we are.
Oh, you know, something amazing. In this modern age, I'm going to try to say something meaningful here. Everything is on the air. No matter who you talk to or where, it can go worldwide in a second if it resonates with
right.
somebody.
Right.
Everything is important today.
Content is king.
Yeah, but everything is important. When you open your mouth, you talk into a microphone or a telephone or anything, it can go worldwide in a second.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what, you know, we're up against in the radio business like anybody else in this economy. It's a tough economy. It's a tough mm-hmm. ad sales environment. It's a tough time for the radio business along with everything else. So, you know, it's the same thing everybody's doing. It's innovating, right? It's
yeah, but you know, I want to say, and again, we're kidding
online.
Around a lot, but what you do is unique. You're a unique personality. You have been, and, you know, God bless you for that. The problem is too many people are the same.
Right.
And the 20th century was sameness. To make it in the 21st century, you've got to stand out.
Michael Harrison, let's go on record. Are you referring to the thousands of Rush clones that are in right-wing radio? Is that what you refer to?
Oh, I mean the thousands of clones that are any kind of clones that are in all radio or television.
Damn
or
it, I almost got him into that on the record.
No, you'll never get me on the record about anything. I live on the record.
Yeah, exactly. You know. You don't ever say anything knowing that it will be repeated somewhere.
At least I'm careful.
Yes, you are. Yeah. No, you are a great promoter of talent of all sides of the... I mean, you aren't partisan. You're a great promoter of anybody that you think is talented.
If there weren't all of these right-wing talk show hosts, what you do would not be so special.
Right.
And that right there, you should hope they always are there.
Well, yeah, it's being the turd in the radio punch bowl, what I'm saying.
That's lovely.
You started it with ass bites, and now you see where you've taken the show?
I'm responsible for this, aren't
you,
I?
You, Michael Harrison, are taking this UN
Listen,
show
ass bites,
right into the gutter.
Ass bites, coined at the UN on this day, is actually a great term.
It's
run with
better
it.
Than sound bites, it's ass bites, Chris.
Absolutely.
So from now on,
yes.
I will ask you to place ass bite number
okay.
12 or
okay.
whatever. all right. John Pugelsang, are you there?
I'm still here.
Hey,
you
John.
Are there.
John is, oh, he is so talented.
Oh,
well,
that,
I was going to say, I'm giving John an opportunity to suck
charismatic,
up to
let me suck up to him. Charismatic, talented, funny, great combination of satire, information, good-looking guy.
Too good-looking for radio, really.
Too good-looking for this planet.
Yes.
This guy is a star.
I know it.
Shucks. Thank you, Ms. Harrison. I have your dry cleaning ready whenever you need
it. Wait a minute. Now we're doubling up. I already got his dry cleaning, damn it. All right.
I have a lot of dirty laundry.
It was a pleasure to see you this week, Michael, and I want to let you know I'm busy right now on the JCPenney Big and Tall Men's Shop picking out presents for the Limbaugh wedding.
And tomorrow, the cover of Talkers Magazine. Michael Harrison of Talkers Magazine. Talkers.com is the website. Thank you so much, honey.
Thank you, Stephanie.
I'll try not to play any more ass bites or fart sound effects while I'm still at the UN. All right, just maybe one more. Okay, that's it.
ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show live from the UN.
Live?
Live. I'm a diplomat. 1-800-STEP-1-2.
Well, then you get diplomatic immunity.
I'm going to go park on the sidewalk just to see if I can get away with it.
I'm a radio host, not a diplomat.
We've just been offered the Canadian ambassador. What do you think about that?
Okay. Hi.
Eh?
Sure. For when?
Sure, I don't know.
What's he going to talk about,
We'll just have you do your poutine jokes.
That horrible Canadian immigration problem.
Yes. We will, Jim, we will talk to them about Canadian comedians coming and taking all the jobs that you and I could presumably be doing in film and television. That's what we'll do. StephanieMiller.com, the website. You can email us all there. Executive producer Chris LaVoy, voice deity Jim Ward, or me, Stephanie Miller. We are joined now by fancy economist guy from the Center for American Progress, Christian Weller. We got some new employment numbers out, I understand. Good morning, Christian.
Good morning, Stephanie. Thank you very much for having me.
I hear it's good news.
Well, yes. We have added 431,000 jobs in May. The unemployment rate has dropped from 9.9% down to 9.7%. Wages are up at an annualized rate of about 2.5%. And the hours that people work has also gone up. So those are the good news. The bad news is that most of the job creation, the overwhelming majority, came from hiring 410,000 new census workers. Ah. That doesn't leave much room.
I was just about to ask you what the right wing is, why they're going to say this is bad. And there it is, ladies and gentlemen.
There it is. The federal government taking over. There are some problem signs clearly in the economy. Manufacturing is good. We added more jobs to manufacturing. We continue to hire in temp services. We continue to hire in a number of services. But where we have problems is in the construction sector. We lost about 35,000 jobs in construction, largely in commercial construction, and about 12,000 people lost their jobs in financial services, largely as a result of mortgage banks essentially laying off people. But that was sort of expected, given that there was this hiring boom in anticipation of the effects of the tax credits, the first-time homebuyer credits, that expired at the end of April. So you expect the drop-off in mortgage bankers in May, since that kind of winds down now. But the commercial construction part is definitely worrisome. And the job losses at state and local government jobs, there's about 30,000 jobs that we lost at state and local governments. That's certainly worrisome, because at this point, typically in a business cycle, state and local governments would add jobs.
Mm-hmm. Christian, let's talk about, you know, we spoke about the oil spill last week, but, you know, it just seems clearly on every level this is becoming, shall we say, worser and worser. Is it possible to even estimate the economic consequences of this?
No, it's not, largely because we don't know exactly where the oil is. Just simply think about, there's oil on the surface, and then some scientists say there is these two big plumes, presumably, under the surface, although BP, for instance, disputes that. So you don't exactly know where the oil is. You don't know exactly where the oil will land. Now we're talking about Florida, possibly moving up the East Coast. So what that ultimately will do and how long this will prevail remains a question, and only once I think it's over you can really fully estimate the effect on fisheries, on tourism, and other economic impact, other economic factors.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, for instance, you know, just the fishermen alone, people have talked about this. I mean, what if they never get their living back? I mean, is it possible that they're never going to be able to start fishing again in some of those areas?
Well, I mean, typically there's going to be cleanup efforts, and even in Alaska, wildlife has come back after the Exxon Valdez, but it will take years, possibly decades, to recover the fishery grounds. So for some fishermen, some fisherwomen, it will mean the end of their careers.
It's nice that BP has given them
it's a very concentrated effect, and especially once in very sensitive areas like the Gulf areas around Louisiana, Mississippi. So I think that the effects on individual lives has been devastating, will continue to be devastating.
Well, it's nice that BP has given them the consolation prize of being able to be exposed to toxic oil and dispersants without protective equipment and perhaps get ill, and then BP will go back and say that it was food poisoning, perhaps. This is going to be part of the problem, isn't it, is getting them to... I mean, so one of the, I guess, you know, like whistleblower contractor guys, I don't know if you saw this, but already said preemptively, BP is going to say the death of these animals it wasn't oil-related, which you can just hear, can't you, in terms of trying to avoid any kind
of... Well, yeah, that's the Katrina insurance claim that it wasn't water. It was
they're just clumsy. They tripped on a tar ball. That's what happened, yeah.
So, but I think the discussion is really how you're going to get BP to pay beyond just a cleanup. I mean,
right.
BP is running these glossy ads in all the newspapers and saying, we're going to do our jobs. Well, they have to do their jobs. The law requires that. So saying, we're going to do the right thing is the law requires you to clean up, then pay for the cleanup. The question now is, how are you going to play for these long-term damages, the destruction of the fisheries, the loss of years of tourism dollars? How do you compensate for that? And I think that's ultimately both going to be a question for Congress, and it's going to be a question, quite frankly, for the courts.
Christian, I guess, you know, a lot of people really feel that, you know, BP really shouldn't be allowed to exist after this. Do you think, I mean, if they really are pay everything that they're supposed to, that they're going to be able to remain solvent?
Well, they seem to have a lot of money. Again, I mean, the question, I mean, right now the cleanup, we're talking not even reaching $1 billion at this point. The government is sending them a check for, I don't know, the last number I saw, $60 million. That's a drop in the bucket for a company like BP. It really ultimately comes down on how you handle these larger damages to the economy.
Well, the fines and the damages, right?
The fines, the damages, really how do you pay for the destruction of this, and it's not as intangible as it sounds. You can calculate the destruction ultimately that is caused by the oil gusher, how many years it will take to rebuild the fisheries, the shrimp population, the oyster population in the Gulf. You can calculate that, and you can calculate the damage from that. So that's not impossible. There's some clear guidance from that came out of the Exxon Valdez spill how to calculate these things. It will take some time to do this, but ultimately we'll know how much the damage was. And then the question is, can you get to BP to pay for it?
Yep.
My assumption is that BP is large enough that it can pay for it. But, again, it depends on how longer this oil will spill and where it ultimately will end up.
Yep. Oh, are you there, Christian?
Yeah.
Yes, I'm there.
Oh, sorry. It's my UN headphones. Sorry. Well, yeah, I mean, I guess that'll be the question is, you know, are they, you know, because from what I understand, I mean, they're already, you know, hiring, obviously, Dick Cheney's PR person, and they're lawyering up, and, you know, here we go again about whether they'll be able to avoid paying for what they should be paying for, right?
Right, and I think that's in the end, I think the lesson here is how do you learn the biggest policy lesson? How do you basically hold a company like BP responsible before it's too late? And that is how do you make sure that there is actually a shutoff valve, something to basically turn off an oil well when things blow up. And that's the problem at this point. I mean, it's laughable looking at this I mean, it really feels like Tony Hayward is talking to his grandchildren about what latest idea they could come up with. I mean, when I look at these news, it seems just silly, like top spill and whatever else the top hat and what else they come up with, and nothing seems to work. And I think the lesson clearly is we shouldn't allow deep sea drilling, deep ocean drilling, or any drilling if
we
simply haven't solved these critical issues of how you shut it off when things blow up.
I agree, unless you happen to have a 46,000-pound pair of garden shears handy, is what we've learned thus far. Christian Weller, economist extraordinaire for the Center for American Progress, thanks as always for your time, sir.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right, there he goes, Christian Weller. We will see him next week. Hi, Jim Ward.
Hello.
It's that time of the show that we call checking in with Jim Ward. Well, why? Because I just made it up now.
That wasn't on the rundown, was it?
What? I just wrote it.
Okay.
It's my show, and I wrote it on the rundown.
Well, you know, it's, if they can't stop this spill, it's projected to go into the Atlantic, and eventually there'll be toxic tar balls washing up on the beach in Cornwall. So I guess that'll be poetic justice in a way. Would that be a tar ball? That'd be.
Yeah, it's like when, you know, whatever's happening now, Jim, it's like when the mechanic does something and something starts spurting out of your car, and it's like, oh, yeah, that's going better now. That's now we've got a handle on, and it's like, but that doesn't look good.
That's normal. After you do a decalcification of the rotor beam cylinder type thing.
Listen, I'm no doctor, Jim, but whatever I saw on TV, it was like, yeah, we're just going to let your carotid artery bleed out, and then we're going to cap it, and it'll all be fine. I'm like, what?
Yes, first we're going to cut the artery so more blood spills out, and then we'll improvise.
Oh, that's a gusher.
We'll find a sponge or something. Or scone. We'll shove a scone into your artery.
A scone.
A scone. That's going to be what Tony Hayward's going to say next.
Clotted cream. That should do it.
Jim, you know are an animal lover like I am, and it's just, man, when you start seeing these pictures, it's just, not that you don't already know the enormity of it, but this one contractor, as we talked about, he went on record yesterday. He said there's a lot of cover-up for BP. They specifically informed us they don't want these pictures of the dead animals. The things I've seen, they just aren't right. All the life out here is just full of oil.
Yep.
I'm going to show you what BP never showed the president. The grasses by the shore were littered with tarred marine life, some dead, others struggling under a thick coating of crude.
It's horrible.
He said, when you see some of the things I've seen, it would make you sick. No living creature should endure that kind of suffering. BP is going to say the deaths of these animals wasn't oil-related. We know
it's
the truth.
It's food poisoning. Clearly food poisoning.
Exactly. They eat clearly the same potato salad that the workers did. And that's clearly,
That's not the only thing they're covering up. They're not allowing planes to fly over certain parts of the Gulf. They're actually dictating to aircraft where they can fly so they don't take pictures of how massive the spill really is.
Yeah, I know.
Why are we giving so much power to BP?
That's infuriating.
The government should have stepped in immediately and said, okay, you guys are done.
Yeah. Well, you know, the president said it again yesterday that the problem is, I mean, still, he said the expertise and the equipment. Well, but I think some of them are involved, at least from what the president said yesterday, right, Chris? I mean, he talked about the other oil companies as well that I don't know. I mean, that's the problem is they tell us this thing is working. Chris, do we know what time today we're going to know whether the cap is going on?
We really never know.
Okay.
But something like 17 different countries offered to help, and they were turned down for some reason. We're going to let BP handle it.
That's the thing, Jim. Again, above my pay grade, you know, mechanically and scientifically. I mean, you know, it's also like the scene of an accident, why they tell people to get back, because, you know, it doesn't help sometimes to have 17 people trying to do the same thing. I don't know.
Scene of a murder where they have the murderer clean up the crime scene.
Yeah, that's what I said earlier. It's like having Ted Bundy. He knows what he's doing here because he understands.
Well, he killed them all, so he knows exactly how
he has the equipment that killed them all, and he has the expertise because he killed
them
all.
And hide them.
Yes.
In the freezer or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So we will keep you apprised of what the what's it called now, Chris? It's the cap on the cap and cut, the cup and cut and cap, the slip and slide. Where are we?
I actually think it's another top hat.
Oh.
Yeah. It's a bowler, technically. This is
now
a bowler.
It's a brooch. 20 minutes after the hour, we continue live from the UN. Laura Flanders coming up as we continue on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Oh, my God, that's kind of hot.
It's The Stephanie Miller Show.
Steffi.
They call me her. They call me
Stephanie Miller.
That's not my name. That's not my name. That's not my name. That's not my name. They call me
It is the Stephanie Miller Show live from the UN. You guys are going to be so impressed with me right now.
Why?
Well, I have the French ambassador to the UN here. You know that, Jim, I can't pronounce normal names, so I'm not even going to try. Here he is to pronounce his own name, the French ambassador.
I am Gérard Haro.
I think it's impossible for an American to pronounce the French air.
You have no idea how badly I would have massacred that.
Really? For it's a very simple name. Arro.
You guys, what you can't see is that I have, I think it's his resume here, and it is like the size of a phone book. It's a large phone book. This is a very distinguished guest we have here, and we thank you for taking time for us. Now, you know, we're a liberal radio show here in America. And one of the big reasons, too, to have you on is because, you know, the right wing here tends to say bad things about France. We couldn't love France more here on our side of the aisle. In the United, we love all things French. I just want you to know that.
Thank you.
Let's talk about, you've got a lot of stuff going on, obviously, right now. You are on the Security Council, right?
Yes.
So what is happening with the Iran resolution?
Actually, France is a permanent member of the Security Council. I think we have been trying to negotiate with the Iranians, I think, since 2003. Because in 2002, we have discovered that there was a clandestine program in Iran, and that the only explanation of this program is really that it has a military dimension. Basically, the Iranians are enriching uranium while they don't have a nuclear power plant. It's exactly like if you buy a gas before buying a car. It doesn't make any sense but military sense. So we have been trying to negotiate. They have not engaged whatsoever. We have decided, you know, the free Europeans first. After that, we have been joined by the Americans, the Chinese, and the Russians to have what we call dual-track policy. On one side, pressure, sanctions. On the other side, we try to engage with the Iranians. We have already voted at the UN Security Council free resolution of sanctions against the Iranians. And I guess that next week we are going to vote a fourth resolution of sanctions against Iran. I think it's very significant because it's not only the West, the so-called West, US, France, UK, but it's also the Chinese and the Russians,
right.
Which means that actually it's not Iraq revisited. It's really a common concern of all the international community.
Right. Obviously, you know, one of the biggest international things in the news is this the Israeli flotilla incident. How long will this investigation take, first of all? I mean, before, what is the process here?
Well, first,
your take on it.
The problem is what investigation we are going to have. It's very clear that the state of Israel for its own reason is not going to accept a UN-led investigation, because our Israeli friends consider that the UN is basically biased against the state of Israel. So what the Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said, and what we have already also said, the French, is that it has to be a credible investigation, and the Israelis are able to conduct a national credible investigation. We trust the Israeli legal system with an international flavor, international dimension. So maybe by calling, you know, experts. This morning people are talking about American experts being associated to the investigation. It's very, very important that really the state of Israel, which is a state of law, shows that actually it cares and that it conducts a real investigation about an awful incident.
Ambassador, you have to obviously be aware that the right wing here in America, it tends to constantly denigrate the UN. You know, the Bush administration, of course, put John Bolton in charge, who, you know, had no use for the UN. Is the feeling better now with the Obama administration in, at least?
Of course, things have really dramatically changed. The U.S. administration, which is also defending the national U.S. interest, is considering, and I think rightly so, that it's better to do it also within the UN. The UN has many flaws, and every member of the UN is aware of them. But in a sense, it's a place where everybody sits around the table, because in the global world, we have global interest. Of course, everybody, including France or the U.S., is defending its national interest, but there are some issues, climate change, for instance, but also fighting terrorism or fighting the trafficking of human beings or trafficking of guns, where I think we need to work together, all the countries of the international community, and that's the only place which
right.
exists.
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, many of us felt in the Bush administration they had no use for diplomacy, period.
No, I think, again, with the French, we had a very tough time with the Bush administration, especially the Iraqi war. But at the end, I think things have improved.
Thank you. It's the French ambassador to the UN. Thank you so much for taking time for us.
Thank you very much, right. Stephanie.
I'm not even going to attempt the name. Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
You can do this.
Stephanie Miller.
Always remember, you're a whore.
live from the UN. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
I wonder if that's the first time the word whore has ever been uttered inside the UN building.
Oh, probably not.
Right now I'm a dirty French whore, if you know what I'm saying.
I'm sure it's
that French accent on the French ambassador. With the chicks dig it.
Yeah.
And what is his name?
His name was Gérard Darroud.
Gérard Darroud.
Okay, you can see why I let him pronounce that. I have, because as you know, I have my UN headset on, Jim, that I used to watch the California gubernatorial debates between Ariana Huffington and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Get back to the chopper.
Just playing the hits, ladies.
Get back to the Acropolis.
Thank you.
And these kinds of things.
Oh, speaking of fake accents, here comes that Laura Flanders, host of Grit TV. Here she goes. Good morning, Laura.
I've been practicing that fake accent. I have to practice in the bathroom every morning if I'm going to retain any shred of an English tone. If I lost it, none of you would take me seriously for a second, right?
It's like International Colors of Benetton or something today on the show.
What are you wearing? What do you wear at the UN?
I'm just wearing my peace necklace, and that really is all it has to do with me being here. That's,
you mean Benetton isn't required?
I don't know. So, Laura, what, it's hard to even keep up with this, especially for chicks, with this BP thing, because the garden shears apparently worked, and I don't know.
I don't think you want to be a chick anywhere near this thing. Are you seeing the pictures, the wildlife, and the birds?
Yeah.
I mean, gee, you don't want to have anything to do with feathers, I don't think, in this whole situation.
Yeah.
But, you know, seriously, I mean, we are looking at a disaster.
I know.
And we still have drilling going on.
I know.
And that Atlantis drill, I know you've talked about it, this other deep-sea rig that BP have just in the same part of the Gulf.
Atlantis, right?
Atlantis, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's still functioning. What do you bet no one is paying attention to that now because they're all focusing on what's happening with the Deepwater Horizon. I mean, don't you think it should just period, stop, cease, none of it going on right now?
Well, you know, Congresswoman Maxine Waters was on the show yesterday, Laura, and, you know, thank God people like her are paying attention to this.
Yeah.
They're saying that that rig, it could be even bigger than this disaster if something like this happened on that rig.
Absolutely, and I just don't. I mean, I wish I could trust the administration, but so far what we've seen is there's this fussy language between a license, right? You get the license to go and drill. We're suspending licenses, no more licenses until et cetera, et cetera. Meanwhile, if you already had a license, all you need is a permit, and at least last time I looked, Ken Salazar at Interior was still granting permits to go ahead and drill on those old licenses.
What? So, I mean, you know, I guess maybe I'm even having a hard time understanding that politically, Laura. Are you? Because I'm going, okay, I understood before this happened, he's trying to reach out across the aisle once again to get votes on the energy bill. But why now?
I think we are dealing on every front, whether you're talking about Wall Street or, frankly, international relations. But certainly BP, we are dealing with too big to care and too big to be good for a democracy. I just think that some of these oil companies have too much power in Washington. I mean, the latest statistics from the Huffington Post, BP hired 27 lobbyists who formerly worked in Congress or the executive branch to come on and work in the during the Obama years. This was just the first 3 months of this year before the spill. BP spent $3.8 million on lobbying. Now, you can say lobbying is just lobbying, but look at who Obama picks to co-chair this investigation into BP, a guy who is on the board of three petrochemical companies and was the executive of one. I mean, this is like asking Israel to investigate itself about the raid on the flotilla.
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, well, that's what, you know.
Which we're doing as well, as I understand it.
Yeah.
It's very consistent, at least.
we were making that analogy, Laura, that, you know, it is at some point like leaving the criminal in charge of the crime scene. You get the original argument. They're the ones with the immediately with the equipment and the expertise. But if this is expertise, I'd like to see incompetence.
Really, I mean, we have had that line for too long, and it's done us too much damage. That's why we were told that Halliburton deserved all those no-bid contracts in Iraq. They didn't deserve baloney. If you had watched their record in Bosnia, we knew these guys lost money, broke equipment, didn't serve people, overcharged for plywood. They may be the only people on the scene, but that doesn't mean they did it well.
Yeah. Well, you know, we were also saying there should be, some sort of chyron when people speak as to how much BP have given to them, shouldn't there? Whether it's
a little truthometer, like a little oil meter.
Yeah, exactly.
You could do a little graphic display of their face, you know, how much black oil.
How oily are they?
Yes. A full to empty gas gauge or something.
Exactly.
But wait a minute. The United Nations must be a little bit exciting right now. I mean, didn't someone at the United Nations just yesterday come out against the drone attacks and said that the United States is basically, undermining the whole rule of war? Of law, rule of law and international law around assassinations, because they won't say who we're killing or why.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to keep a low profile here, Laura. I'm virtually the only person that came and asked where to plug in my fart machine, sound effect machine. So I'm just trying to, not get involved in any other international incidents.
Come on, one more won't do you any harm. Find this guy, Philip Alston. Put the word out.
He's the
rapporteur on extrajudiciary summary executions. I mean, I think this is somebody you need to know.
Oh yeah, I dated him once. Now that I recall. Now that you say it, sure. Laura, so the president met with Jan Brewer yesterday, the governor whose father apparently died fighting Nazis, or maybe 10 years later, either way.
Somewhere in there.
Yes. What do you think came of that? Anything?
I mean, I'm hoping that something came of it, like you've got to suspend that law, whatever it is, 1070. Stop it. This is causing craziness on the border here. But unfortunately, I suspect it was more. I mean, what Jan Brewer seems to be doing is covering her rear end because of the economic crisis her state
right.
is in. So she's facing horrible financial cuts on the one hand, having to cut back programs, having to even possibly, think about raising taxes. This whole ploy around immigration is just to get conservatives on her side because they're so angry on the fiscal side. So I don't know, maybe he was saying I'll help out with some federal dollars if you suspend this law, but unfortunately I doubt it.
Yeah. Do you think that she actually said the phrase "finish the dang fence" at any point during the meeting? Or? No.
Well, right in between him saying "stop the damn hole."
Yeah.
There's a lot of it's rage. It was rage galore, I'm sure, at the White House.
Laura, I know you've done Radio Rose before, so you know that people can just pester you while you're talking live. And I know that you know the guy that owns my show that's trying to kill me for the life insurance money. He just passed me a note saying, "I love Laura. She eats sausage. Very British." Which, for some reason, he felt was important for me to share with you now.
Important news. At breakfast, what he didn't have was breakfast, a good sausage breakfast. That's
bangers.
Just for the whole year.
I'm frankly tired of people using me to get to you, Laura, at this point.
But wait, did I hear a rumor? Has New York not treated you right?
New York has chewed me up and spit me out.
Come on now.
I am like...
We invite you to parties. Come on now. We did all that here.
I had temporary leases on both ends. And so and it turns out Broadway doesn't go for booze and dope. And so I'm crawling back to Hollywood.
I thought you said you had temporary leave. Did they let you out?
I'm terribly sad.
I feel like we let you down, and we just didn't come through for the East Coast here.
That's exactly it. It's you personally.
I take this stuff very personally.
If I'd known I can get a UN parking pass and park anywhere, I might have stayed. But
I'm sure it could be arranged. I'm telling you, find this guy. The expert on summary executions. Yes. He knows who to talk to.
We'll be able to park on the sidewalk and talk about drones together.
That's it.
I'll bring my box wine.
could now, just say, if the U.S. can have drones, why can't I have drones? Why don't we all have drones?
Exactly.
I can think of a few people I'd like to drone.
Laura, what's going on Grit TV, which I've been lucky enough to be on?
You're going to be back on before you leave. You betcha.
Okay.
And Grit TV is a fabulous new TV show that everybody should be watching. If they're not, we're online, we're on satellite, we're on public television in some places, we're on cable. You can find us on your computer at grittv.org. Fabulous stuff. News, politics, commentary. Stephanie's on, John Fugelsang is on, you name it.
Yep.
Now, you know how people love to give you a challenge. We're actually a nonprofit project, and we broadcast on a nonprofit channel on Free Speech TV, the Dish Network, channel 9415. So, you know these foundation philanthropist people, they love to give you a challenge.
Yes.
So they give you a challenge. If you can do this, then we'll do that. We have two people gave us a challenge at the same time, that if we could raise $100,000 by the end of June, we would get $200,000.
Ooh.
2-to-1 match. And we are, at this point, $16,000 away. So I am calling on
all
of your viewer listeners, because now everything is multimedia.
Yes.
And when Stephanie's on our show, you can see her in all her glory.
Yes.
To make a contribution, $5. Somebody sent $1 the other day. Somebody sent $500 this morning. We're going to get there and just show these people that we can do it. You have to go to grittv.org and make a contribution, whatever you can do. You're just showing those guys
yes.
that we may not be able to fill the hole, to stop the pipeline, but we can meet this challenge, and then we'll start working on that pipeline problem.
Laura Flanders is truly doing the Lord's work. Give to her now. Do it for Mama. Do it because I said so.
Do it for Mama, and maybe we'll be able to afford to tempt Stephanie to stay a little longer in New York.
That was it.
Stephanie wants her life back.
My life back,
and,
miss.
And sausages. And we have a link to Grit TV up at StephanieMiller.com.
Best. You see, this is how we do it. We do it together.
We
Doesn't
do.
It feel good? It's, don't you have that little
It's also... liberally incestuous, isn't it?
It is the grand left media conspiracy that we
We're trying our best. Laura Flanders from Grit TV. Thanks, honey. I'll see you soon.
You're so welcome.
All right. There she goes.
Hooray.
Laura Flanders. Who is hot and it's sausage, according to the guy that knows
well,
the
Well, they
show
call them bangers.
Here.
Bangers? Just measure.
All right. Thank you, Tim.
What
I'm saying is,
Is that the guy who owns the show that's trying to kill you for life insurance money laughing?
Yeah. That's right.
Uh-huh. There he is. Oh, there's his evil voice now.
Oh, boy.
Yes.
there's Mr. Spacely now.
As Jim Ward says,
are you bringing...
if you can't join them, Jim, what can you do?
Something that I can't say on the radio.
You know, some people should be on the radio, and some people should just pay for them. Oops, look at the time.
Oh,
we have to
dear.
Go now. 45 minutes.
We have commercials to play. Yes,
we have commercials to play. 45 minutes after the hour. Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show, live from the UN.
Can we absolutely positively guarantee that it will give me an orgasm?
Yeah.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show live from the UN. By the way, that was a real French guy we had. It was not Jim doing...
C'est vrai. C'est pas moi. C'est Monsieur l'Ambassadeur.
I see the world in terms of your characters. All right. Oh, here's another international news, by the way.
Oh.
The headline is Morning Glory, Scottish man convicted of solo sex romp on trampoline.
Oh, no.
Oh, hey.
A woman was left stunned when she saw her neighbor engaged in a solo sex romp on a trampoline. As she looked out of her window, she saw James Burden stark naked with a cigarette in one hand and his genitals in the other. You have to admit, you don't see that every day.
Can you confuse the hands when you do that?
Can a sex romp be solo?
Apparently this one was, but this one was bouncy.
Oh.
It was on I guess that's why it was a romp. You get one more traction that way.
I suppose.
All right, one more.
You didn't have to move your hand. You're bouncing up and down.
Minnesota man attempts to steal car with no brakes.
Oh.
This should be one of the rules of life. Never try to steal a horse with no name or a car with no brakes. A would-be car thief ended up with a headache, no car, and an embarrassment in what turned out to be a very short time on the lam. On Saturday, a local man saw an Audi in a driveway. The keys were in the vehicle, but unbeknownst to the thief, the brakes were not, as the car's master cylinder had been removed by the owner in order to repair the brakes. He drove a short distance, attempted to brake, at which point the car slammed into a tree, causing his head to slam into the windshield. He was transported to the hospital after the police arrived. So there.
Well, yeah, that just goes to show you shouldn't steal anything, because you never know if it has brakes or not.
There you go. But, speaking of people that sound like they've had their heads slammed repeatedly into windshields, let's dive into Right Wing World, shall we? Why not? Oh, God, this guy. Mark Belling.
Yeah.
Which rhymes with yelling. The guy that fills in for Rush Limbaugh. On Nancy Pelosi.
I'm serious in asking this question. Could Nancy Pelosi manage a McDonald's? I don't think so. We know how Rahm Emanuel managed the McDonald's. He'd fire everybody and hire all of his friends and not worry about what the quality of the food was like. As for Obama, all he has ever done in his life is talk and try to advance himself.
I just want to say I think Nancy Pelosi would do a bang-up job running a McDonald's.
I think so. I think she's a little overqualified to run
a bit, yeah.
But
and there'd probably be tofu on the menu, but but
yeah, she's a little too much of a foodie, being from San Francisco and all.
Yeah.
All right, Stuart Varney on the Fox Business Channel.
I think demonizing business is the message which Democrats are going to carry into this November election.
What?
And blaming the previous administration.
Yes.
But demonizing business, that is at the heart of this administration's economic policy. Think about it. What kind of an approach to business does this display? What kind of an approach to politics does this display? I mean, we treat business more harshly than we treat terrorists.
He's talking about BP?
He's
talking about the oil companies?
Like terrorists. Because they caused the worst ecological disaster in the history of the world. You're going down hard on poor Tony, who wants his life back. That's all he wants.
I can't ever say that guy's name without thinking of the... Or what's his name? The Ernest character. The whatever.
What?
Ed Varney? Who am I thinking of?
Vern. Hey, Vern.
Vern. Yeah, exactly. All right, Hannity and Rudy Giuliani on the oil crisis.
How would you rate the president's handling of the Gulf crisis?
It couldn't be worse. This would be an example if you're taught leadership 101 of exactly what not to do. Minimize it at first. 2 days after or 3 days after it happened, go on vacation. He's been on vacation more often than he has by far been to Louisiana or Mississippi or any of the places affected.
Or playing golf or shooting hoops.
He gives the sense that he's very nonchalant and very lackadaisical about it.
Oh, see, they're trying to make him just like George Bush and Katrina. See what they're doing there?
Yeah.
But I wonder if Rudy learned in Leadership 101, Jim, how you don't let the fire and police radios communicate and you put the command center in the World Trade Center.
Because... What could possibly go wrong if the police and the fire department can't communicate with each other? Then I only had 8 years to fix the problem. Just cut me some slack.
Or perhaps you learned in Leadership 101 how to run a presidential campaign.
Yeah.
Spend it all on Florida. Go, Rudy, go. All right. Charles Krauthammer on the Brit Bear.
Ripper. The president is required, the executive is required under our Constitution to execute the laws. We have laws about immigration. The government has, by its own acknowledgement, failed 10 million times to enforce it. It says there are that many illegals in the United States. And now it says we'll only enforce it if we get comprehensive reform, i.e., we're not going to enforce an existing law until we get a change in the law or a new law. You can't hold an existing law hostage, the enforcement of an existing law hostage, if you are the executive. To a legislative agenda you have. You've got to enforce the law.
Apparently this problem just started.
I was just going to say, and plus, you know, arrests and deportations are up under Obama. So, you know...
That's my point. He should be arresting less. Whatever he's doing, I suggest the opposite.
Yes. O'Reilly on the Arizona law.
The Los Angeles Unified School District will apparently instruct public school students that the new Arizona anti-illegal alien law is morally wrong. Can you believe
what?
It? The nation's second largest school district is now bringing ideology and propaganda into the classroom.
Shocking.
Using civics and history classes to tell children that law, supported by most of the nation, is morally Republican. Repugnant, I should say. No spin.
Freudian
slip. The fact that the L.A. educators are ramming one-sided ideology down the throats of kids is the real moral outrage here.
Interesting imagery.
Yes.
Republicans use that a lot.
Wow. So, I see. So, teaching that perhaps it's not a good idea to target people because of the color of their skin, that's a that would be the moral outrage there.
Right.
We should continue to teach them that that they can't play in any of our reindeer games, the brown people.
From now on, gang, we won't let Rudolph join in any reindeer games.
Mm-hmm. We should be teaching them that brown people are evil. They're not like you. Send all those Indians home.
O'Reilly and the soothing Laura Ingraham.
We don't have time for that, Steph.
Oh, we don't?
No,
we don't. Well, I don't have a clock because I'm here on Radio 20, Row.
20 seconds left.
Which I love.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you for that.
Mm-hmm, you're welcome.
All right. Well, we have Laura Ingraham to look forward to then, don't we?
Yes, we do, after the break.
And Van Jones, formerly of the White House on green jobs and the BP crisis and much more, as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show, live from the United Nations here in New York. StephanieMiller.com, the website, 1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number, toll-free from anywhere. Joined by the Canadian ambassador now, John McNee. Good morning, Ambassador.
Good morning, Stephanie.
So nice for you to take time for us. And by the way, I could pronounce your name, which was a plus for me. Now, first of all, I have to get your take. You've, seen all this coverage of the oil spill here in the States. And one of the things that I hear again and again is, doesn't Canada require companies to drill the relief well at the same time as the original well?
Gosh, Stephanie, I honestly don't know the answer to that question.
Okay.
I know we have quite strict environmental standards, but that's kind of far from
it's
my
your
day-to-day
area.
At the UN.
Your area of expertise.
Yeah, exactly.
I just wanted to get your take. I just wondered, because that was our impression as Americans, that you have, stricter environmental controls than we do. I mean, this is really tragic, isn't it?
Well, I think as the president has made clear, it is a terrible tragedy, and everything is being done to address it. And it's a big challenge for all advanced economies, is how to undertake these kind of activities in a safe and responsible way. But as I say, it's pretty far from my area.
From your purview.
Yeah.
Let me play the president yesterday. Obviously, immigration, a big concern here in the United States. This is the president yesterday about the Arizona law.
Although I understand the frustration of the people of Arizona when it comes to the inflow of illegal immigrants, I don't think this is the right way to do it. I think this puts American citizens who look Hispanic, are Hispanic, potentially in a unfair situation. And more importantly, it also creates the prospect of 50 different laws in 50 different states when it comes to immigration.
As our northern neighbor, Ambassador, I'm just interested in your take on the whole immigration debate here in the U.S.
Well, I think what we've heard, Stephanie, in that clip from the president is that this is a subject of intense debate, but it's an American debate, and it's not really for foreigners to comment on it. Canada and the United States are open societies, both of which have been built by immigrants over hundreds of years, and each one has to find the right balance between openness and receptivity to immigrants and welcoming them and the contribution they make, and having reasonable measures to deal with people who go around the rules and enter the countries illegally. And again, these aren't easy. You know, there are no magic solutions to flows of people across borders, and in each country wrestles with them and has to do so. So we follow the debate with interest, but it's not really our debate, and it would be presumptuous for foreigners to say this or that about an internal American discussion.
You know, it's interesting as you watch the political scene here in the States. I mean, I'm sure you hear the right wing oftentimes sort of demonize Canada, whether it's the health care system or gun laws. And then Michael Moore goes up and does a documentary and we go, that's pretty good. What is your take on, you know, the political you know, fights that we have here and how Canada gets sort of, you know, drawn into it sometimes?
Well, I think that it's you know, it's a reasonable point of comparison. I mean, these are, you know, such two countries that are so close, that are such good friends, that face similar challenges across, you know, from A to Z. So I think the fact that whether it's healthcare and the people who favor going one way on healthcare or favor going the other way would draw on what's going on in Canada to make their arguments, you know, is a, I think, perfectly normal thing to do. I think the only thing for representatives of the Canadian government to do is if there are misconceptions about what happens in Canada, to gently try and put the record straight. But I think it's you know, it's all fair in these kinds of debates.
You realize that people enjoy the content of what you're saying, but they love we love when you say about. We can't
and
help ourselves. We cannot help ourselves. Ambassador McNee, you have this giant folder with you, and you said the first study, the oil spill, not my purview. What's in your purview day to day? What are you working on?
Well, that's a very fair question. Well, I mean, just give you one for instance. I mean, Canada, this in a couple of weeks, will be chairing the G8 meeting of G8 leaders and of the G20 after that. And one of the things that will be a big priority for Canada is an initiative to promote maternal and child health. Around the world, the statistics show that there's not much progress is being made in promoting and bringing about safer childbirth and helping infants make it from, you know, 0 to 5.
Right.
And so Canada believes it's extraordinarily important to try and do better and to rally. The United States is a big commitment in this field. All our partners do to try and, you know, make a concerted effort, because all the studies show that whatever you can do to promote the health of women, of mothers, has a great multiplier effect for development in society. So that's just one thing that we're working on right now.
Wow, and that's just before breakfast, I bet.
With the UN. The UN is, you know, the UN Secretary General and partner are very engaged on that. And Haiti is another big priority. Yeah. I'm going in 10 days to Haiti, leading a group of countries that have a particular interest and concern for the development in Haiti, countries from Latin America, from Africa, from the Caribbean.
How is the situation in Haiti? I mean, you know, the American news cycle, we're onto the Gulf, the oil spill now, you know, but I know that our friend John Fugelsang was just down there, and
well, I think that's a really good question. We all have a tendency after some big event to then kind of, there's a tendency, a human tendency to forget. And now it's perhaps an even more difficult phase as the country tries to move from the immediate relief to the rebuilding. And that's why it's so important to sustain the attention. And Canada's made a big commitment, I think $400 million over the next 2 years. Canada's second only to the United States in terms of contributing. So we're trying to keep the focus on the needs of Haiti and help the Haitians to rebuild.
Well, you are doing important work. This can only be a waste of your time, but we appreciate so much you've taken time. Ambassador John McNee, the Canadian ambassador to the UN. Thank you so much, sir.
My great pleasure, Stephanie.
All right, thank you.
Nice to meet you.
There he goes. All right.
Wow.
You know what happens, Chris, is it does become like South Park, right? That he's really talking some good substance, and you're just waiting for the about.
About A to Z.
A to Z. We both we both stood up and cheered in here in the studio when he said A to Z.
Literally.
Yeah.
He literally did.
I had to throw Chris a serviette to clean up the drool. So excited about A to Z.
That's the South Park. I figured you guys safe in the studio could stifle your giggles.
Yeah.
He said a boot.
Oh, it made me proud because it's my family's homeland, if you will.
I know.
Uh-huh.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Chris, I hate to promise and not deliver because with the soothing tones of Laura Ingraham and the one last soundbite from Right Wing World.
That. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Here we are on O'Reilly.
You're crazy. You just want to denigrate everybody in the administration.
I want to denigrate everybody.
You want to denigrate every single person Obama knows.
Who's handling this well?
If the driver of his car you want to go
who's
after.
Who's handling this well?
Jindal.
In the Obama administration, Bill, who's handling this well?
No one.
Thank you.
Okay.
You just made my point,
okay.
Counselor.
No one is handling it
right.
well.
Right. I'm not denigrating them. Our country is bleeding. We need someone to stop
the
bleeding.
And that's Obama's responsibility.
Right, but he has top people. He can't be down there every day.
Oh, I see. Just the Republican is the only one that's
right.
doing it. That's weird, huh? It's almost like Fox News has a slant of some sort. Okay.
I'm sick of their crap.
Representative, that concludes Right Wing World. Thank God. Representative Don Young.
Yes.
Republican says the Gulf oil gusher is not an environmental disaster.
Oh, okay.
What? Well, then we can just go home.
Yeah.
And he said, I will say that again and again because it's a national phenomenon.
It's
oil
a phenomenon.
Has seeped into this ocean for centuries and will continue to do it. Oh, this is the Rush Limbaugh thing. Mm-hmm. It's, there's always been oil, my friends. The ocean cleans itself as a giant douche. he said, we will lose some birds. We'll lose some fixed sea life, but overall we'll recover. I wonder if anyone, we should check the BP oil meter under his name and see how much.
We should send him swimming in the Gulf just to see how he likes it.
Yeah. By the way, Haley Barbour, boy, he's had some gems, hasn't he, since this whole thing started?
Yeah.
He, as recently as last week, went on CNN to blame the news coverage for the state's woe. So you see, Jim, it's not what actually is happening.
It's
the pictures of it that
yes.
tends to make it look bad.
Mm.
He, for the state's woes, telling Wolf Blitzer, we haven't had enough oil hit Mississippi's beaches to fill up a milk jug. Barbour went out of his way to lavish praise on BP, exclaiming that the British oil conglomerate has been completely cooperative. Wow. What's it like in Haley Barbour's world?
Yeah.
he said, literally, we haven't had really any impact.
Oh.
I mean, we haven't had enough oil hit Mississippi's beaches to fill up a milk jug. Now, we're prepared and we're prepared for the worst, but thus far we haven't had any kind of incursion, except the news coverage is killing our tourist business. Everybody thinks that the Gulf Coast...
Oh, so it's the damn media's fault.
Yes. Everyone thinks the Gulf Coast is all the way around is ankle deep in oil, and of course it's not.
Oh,
wow.
God.
So you should still go fishing, Jim.
Yeah,
because
the fish aren't putting up a fight. It's easy.
Neither are the pelicans.
And they are covered in oil, so you just stick them in the pan and heat them up, no problem.
Yeah, exactly. You don't need to buy olive oil or anything.
They're
already in
no
oil.
No stick spray or nothing.
They're already self-basting.
They make their own gravy.
Yes.
Oh, boy. Oh, that's on the very on the very sad, funny line, isn't
it? Well, we're really treading that line.
That's
today.
Very on the cut a laugh or you'll cry all day line. So Harry Reid is calling on the Senate's key committee chairman to come up with a comprehensive energy strategy by July 4th, accelerating the push for legislation in the wake of the oil spill. Reid demanded swift action from Democrats to address both the existing situation and reduce the risks of such a catastrophe happening again. I still ask, I don't know how we can drill at all until we have... assurance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, Maxine Waters, one of the only people talking about the Atlantis rig that is bigger than this one and could be a bigger disaster. I mean, how is it that we suddenly have the, you know, the technology when we don't right now? Well, generally, it's safer. You know, when we see all the evidence to the contrary right in front of our eyes. I don't get it. All right. I need to pause briefly while I...
Are you okay? Do you need a Heimlich, an aspirin or something? I don't know.
And you know what, Chris? I'm going to the International House of Pancakes after this because it's just that kind of morning for me. And we have Van Jones coming up, environmental advocate, senior fellow with the Center for American Progress. We will talk about his stint in the White House and his... he was just on Real Time with Bill Maher.
He's on tonight.
Oh, and I'm sorry, he will be on tonight. So we will talk to him about all that and the spill in the Gulf as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show live from the UN.
Do you like it?
It's brilliant.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Hey, folks, Stephanie Miller here. You know, in 5,000 years, governments and currencies have come and gone, but gold remains real money. That kind of stability is very desirable in times like these. That's why you should call my friends at ITM Trading. ITM has an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. I have some historic Double Eagle gold coins from ITM. You should, too. ITM's been safely delivering gold and other precious metals for almost 15 years. We're all hopeful about our country's finances, but hope may not be enough. In this economy, you've got to think ahead. I like to take my cues from large, sophisticated buyers, and with China and India buying up tons of gold recently, I think gold's an important diversification right now. Call the experts at ITM Trading, a loyal sponsor of my program for over 4 years now. They'll answer all your questions and send you a free information packet detailing what you need to know about owning gold. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. 1-888-OWN-GOLD. 1-888-OWN-GOLD.
Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show live from the UN.
The UN would suck without Stephanie Miller.
Hello. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Tim in Chicago, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome. Hey, Tim.
Hey, how you doing, Steph, guys? I was just asking myself, shouldn't BP and whatever else oil company be drilling relief wells, like wherever else they have wells? Because what if, like, one explodes tomorrow, and they got to wait another 3 to 4 months to make another relief well, and we got to go through it all over again. So that's my question. Shouldn't they be just mandated to do that?
My understanding is they're drilling two now, aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, well, what if there's another well somewhere else that explodes and they don't have a relief well?
So you're saying every well
should have a relief well.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's what we were just talking. Yeah, I mean, that's what we were saying, that I think they do in Canada. I think there's a lot of countries I think we need to learn from on this. I mean, Jim, you've talked about the acoustic switch. I mean, you look at these things, it's like the pictures we always talk about after Hurricane Katrina. Why do other countries' levees look like this and ours look like crap? Like, you know, we're so priorities. America's bigger and better and we do this and that. And it's like, you know, some things we don't. We ought to have the humility to fix it.
We make stuff that blows up. That's what we do.
Well, we blow up stuff real good. All right, thank you, Tim. Wow, Jim, I would have been like to be a fly on the wall.
Doing all that would be rather inconvenient for me. It doesn't really work for me to drill all those wells.
Yeah, I'd like to have been a fly on the wall for this dinner. James Carville walked into a New Orleans restaurant the other night and was stunned to find Tony Hayward having dinner with Thad Allen.
Mm.
Hayward looking up from his gulp shrimp and pasta, wasted no time defending his embattled and vilified company. You've said some harsh things, Hayward said to Carville.
Oh, my God.
It's very hurtful to me, the harsh things you've said.
I hope that shrimp was caught fresh yesterday. You're going to be feeling that.
James Carville says everything in a harsh way.
Yeah, okay, exactly.
Well, look who he's married to.
Can I just say, so he sat with him for 30 minutes? That would have been just those two accents alone you would have needed my UN headset for, wouldn't you? Carville has said that the president, what did he say the president needs to make, he needs to be BP's daddy?
Yeah, that's right. You got to be BP's daddy. Going to be your daddy, not your bitch.
I think that's what he meant, yes. Yeah, I was going to say Gulf shrimp. I guess that was caught previously.
Yes, before the little incident.
Yes.
Before the unpleasantness.
Yes, all that unpleasantness.
All right. Governor Jan Brewer, by the way, we have sound from yesterday after her meeting with the president.
I would like to see construction started on a fence on the border.
Fence.
And I tried to get that kind of information from him today. I was not successful. I was successful in getting the promise that somebody would be out to Arizona within the next couple of weeks to speak with my staff to give us the kind of information that they have available to present to us. And so we're looking forward to that. And I, you know, today I'm further ahead than I was yesterday. At least I've got a promise of 2 weeks information, facts that we can share with the people of Arizona, with the people of America.
See, if you build a fence, you just, you walk around it.
Yes,
you
or go under
to
it.
Another state. And
yeah, you go under it. Yeah. You know, you build a 12-foot fence, somebody will bring a 13-foot ladder. You
well,
know?
Unless, of course, it's a dang fence, which apparently would be the most effective.
Right.
Finish
thing
the
according.
Dang fence and get those kids off my dang lawn.
By the way, Chris, I understand that, you know, the right-wing radio hosts in L.A., John and Ken,
yes.
that made fun of Linda Sanchez and called her fat, and then we had Linda Sanchez in to talk about it yesterday.
Yes.
Apparently, they played that interview on John and Ken yesterday. so now this is becoming like Keith Olbermann and...
I got a few emails from some
talk
angry...
Soup.
I got a few emails from some angry John and Ken listeners.
Oh,
yes.
good.
Yes.
Yes. So now we'll have to get that interview and play that back again.
Does it include the part where I say they look like a couple of goobers?
Well, they kind of do.
They really do.
And Jim was man enough to say that from right up the hallway from where their show
yes.
is.
And have they noticed that they're not the slimmest people in the world?
See, now we're going to be accused of telling fat jokes.
Well.
All right. I think they're both handsome gents, although politically misguided. All right, here's
okay,
Governor...
Yeah, you keep thinking that.
Here's Governor Jan Brewer.
So we are going to begin some really... more direct dialogue in a couple of weeks. People from the staff are coming out to Arizona to brief us on what their projections are going to be in regards to the 1,200 National Guard and the $500 million that he has indicated that he's going to send down there, and we're going to see how that's going to get distributed. He assured us that the majority of those resources would be coming to Arizona.
And I'm an expert in the military because my father died fighting Nazis.
Oh, no.
Or not. All right. 29 minutes after the hour, back with Van Jones next on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
Is this really happening? Because I just shotgunned a 40 of Robitussin and everything's kind of awesome.
I need it today.
Yeah.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show live from the U.S.
Do they sell Robitussin in 40-ounce bottles?
I don't know. I'm going to go find out, though.
Yeah.
All right. We are joined by Van Jones. He is a senior fellow focusing on green-collar jobs and how cities are implementing job-creating climate solutions. He is a globally recognized award-winning pioneer in human rights and the clean energy economy. Good morning, Van.
Good morning to you.
Thanks for coming back on with us. We appreciate it.
Glad to be here.
And, oh, don't forget, you're the best-selling author of the definitive book on green jobs, the green-collar economy.
Thank you for the plug.
You, of course, were the green jobs advisor in the Obama White House. I mean, got to talk to you, obviously, as, you know, such an expert on the environment about what is it too large a phrase to say unmitigated disaster in the Gulf?
No, it's not too large to say. This is probably going to wind up being the biggest environmental catastrophe in the history of human civilization, not just... the United States, and the facts are, we have a foreign corporation that came over here. They corrupted our government under the Bush administration, got unprecedented waivers to do something incredibly reckless. Then they flagged up our coastline. They caused the death of innocent workers. They're destroying the economy of that region, possibly for decades, as well as the ecology. This is what happens when America's government is not allowed to be strong enough to regulate corporate misbehavior. Bottom line, this is the verdict is in. We had 8 years plus where we decided we didn't care if America's government was strong enough. And so the federal government is too strong. We got to make it weaker. And when you say a federal government, you mean America's government. They weakened America's government. They let corporations corrupt America's government, and this is the outcome.
Well, I mean, and it's certainly people like you have been making this case for years, and you hate to have a tragedy like this to have to prove your point, but isn't that exactly it? All these people that have been screaming about smaller government are now like, where's the government? And criticizing everything the government's doing, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, what is the Tea Party's answer to this? You know, their answer to everything is cut the government. Well, guess what? Sometimes you actually need America's government to be strong enough to protect America's workers, to protect America's beauty, our coast. coastline, our environment, and, you know, this is what happens. And I'll tell you the other thing, too, which we've got to make the point over and over again. You know, it's pay now or pay later. If we had a price on carbon, if we had passed cap and trade, you know, 10 years ago, where we could see the price of using these dirty fuels early and have a rational plan to move away from them, we wouldn't have to pay this catastrophic cost on the back end. What are they doing out there? We use 25% of the world's oil. We only have 4% of the oil's, of the world's oil reserves.
Oh, I thought we only had 2%.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, four if you want to go buck wild, include the tar sands and everything else.
Right.
We'll never drill and burn our way out. So you're talking about maximum risk, maximum pain for tiny, tiny little bits of gain. And, you know, that's the other thing we've got to look at. This whole drill, baby, drill thing, you know, to me, at this point, we got to take a big step back. It's like cockroaches, all right? You got one cockroach in your house. You can lie to yourself. You can say, oh, it came in on the pizza box. No, you got 1,000 cockroaches. You got one, you got 1,000. You got right. one rig that goes down like this. You got 1,000 rigs out there that are just as risky, that are with the same lack of preparation. We got to have a complete moratorium on any more drilling, and we've got to look at all the rigs that are out there.
Then, you know, we've heard people talk about the fact that aren't there still waivers that have been issued since this even happened, and why? That's the case.
Well, it is true, apparently, that, you know, somehow this, you know, Animal House agency is still out there, until recently was still out there, rubber stamping more permits. And this is what we've got to focus on. This is what happens when you let an agency get wholly captured by corporate influence. So, you know, the president can come in and can appoint people at the political level, but the people below that level have been stacked in there from the last administration. They are lit. When I say they're in bed with the oil, I mean with porn. I mean,
yeah, literally.
I mean, yeah. Literally in bed. And so you've got this Animal House agency. It's got to be cleaned out. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we have to take responsibility as a country. You can't, you know, if BP is a drug pusher, we're the buyer. We've been pushing America's energy workers to do riskier and riskier things to get the supply of this dirty energy up. We send our coal miners deeper and deeper into the mountains to keep powering America the same way. They're risking their lives. We're sending our oil workers deeper and deeper out into the ocean, risking their lives, you know, digging these deeper holes. America's future is not down those holes. America's future is not down those holes. If you want to see this future for America, look up. Look at the sun. Look at the wind. Look at the solar power, wind, energy. Look in the eyes of our workers. They're sitting there idle right now in Indiana, Michigan, Ohio, across America. They could be building those solar panels. They could be building those wind turbines. They could be building those smart batteries and putting America back to work. There are way more jobs in the clean energy economy repowering America than there are down those holes.
You know, as a former Obama advisor, as you speak, I can't help but keep thinking, why can't you still be advising the president? you're giving such good advice. Do you think the president is getting bad advice? What is your take on his handling of this thus far?
You know, I think the president's getting a bum rap here. I mean, people, the president of the United States, this is the best president we've ever had. I don't care what anybody says, this is the best president we probably will ever have. But he's not Dumbledore. This isn't a Harry Potter movie. He can't just wave his arms and just, you know, somehow the oil's going to disappear if he just looks madder. The reality is he inherited a corrupt agency, and he's dealing with one of the worst corporations in the world. And to me, he looks mad. People, he's not mad enough. Well, you know what? Dad is mad. When the attorney general is down there treating the Gulf like a corporate crime scene, rattling the handcuffs, the people at BP think Dad is mad. When Lisa Jackson from EPA has started the process to take every one of their government contracts away, the people at BP think Dad is mad. And I think we got to get away from, we want him to put on the wetsuit and go down there and fill it and plug the hole, and recognize that the whole country has, you know, we're addicts, and we've been willing to turn a blind eye to this kind of stuff, and now the bill has come due.
But, Van, I think, you know, what our question is, we listen to you, is so why do we have to continue drilling? Because I agree with all of your points. And, you know, originally before this happened, you think, well, this is more the president's bipartisan outreach and he needs votes on the energy bill and yada, yada. But, you know, why shouldn't this result in a moratorium on drilling?
Well, you know, we're there now, and I think we should stay there. You know, when I was a kid, we used to sing this song, America the Beautiful. And I think we've got a patriotic duty to defend America's beauty from these oil spillers and clear cutters and strip miners. You know, at a certain point, we've got to stand up and be proud of our values as progressives and as patriots and say enough is enough. Here's the other thing that drives me nuts. People say, we gotta drill so we can be independent. We gotta drill so we can have energy independence. This is a foreign multinational corporation drilling oil to sell to China. What are you talking about? You don't even understand how the industry works. This is not a American's oil. It's not, somehow, a mom and pop.
Yeah,
oil
it goes
company.
On the world market. It has nothing to do with gas and prices here.
Nothing to do with gas prices. Nothing to do with our supply at all. We have sold away America's beauty. We've risked America's beauty for tiny drops of oil that are going to mostly go to China or wherever the highest bidder is going to be, which is probably going to be over in Asia. And yet we continue to get led down the road with this drill baby drill nonsense.
Well, boy, and speaking of which, I mean, doesn't it just gall you? You know, you're a victim of politics in some ways. That it's this drill baby drill crowd that is criticizing the oil and gas guys that put these regulations in place. They're criticizing how President Obama is handling
this.
Well,
and then you have Sarah Palin, who's gone so far as to say that this proves her point. She says, I was only saying drill baby drill for proven safe areas. I've been Googling all day trying to find that quote. Wait, I don't remember that in the big speech. I don't remember her saying, from the Republican drill, baby, drill in the safe, proven area. That wasn't the point at all. They said drill the whole thing. Drill here, drill now, pay less. And it turns out, it's spill here, spill now, and pay forever.
Well, Van, answer that right-wing talking point, because you've heard it now a million times, that, this is environmentalist fault because they're forcing us to drill out this far.
Well, the reality is the oil companies then lied and said, we can do it. We've got the technology. We can control everything. They went, they spent hundreds of millions of dollars, lying to Congress, lying to the American people. And it turns out that they spent about 2% of all their time thinking about what would happen if something bad went down. They spent the other 98% of the time thinking about their $63 million a day profit. I didn't say income. I said profit. $63 million a day in profit BP was making, and they refused to put in a $500,000 safety valve. Well, look, if you're going to have that kind of duplicity and that kind of sheer avarice from these foreign corporations, and you're still going to stick with them, I think there's something wrong with your worldview.
Right. Well, but literally, like you say, people like Sarah Palin are going, oh, well, see, this is what I said. If we could drill in the Arctic and in closer, then this wouldn't happen. What's your take on that?
That's absolutely not true. Every problem that you see off the Gulf, there were literally, while this oil gusher, it's not a spill, this is an oil volcano. And while this oil volcano was going off, you still had ships going up to Alaska to do the same thing in sub-zero weather with, huge ice floes that shift around. You have a mistake or disaster up there, all of the problems that you have to try to contain this one go up a factor of 100. And so, I think what we've got to do at this point is, have that intervention moment with the addict. We're the addicts. And say, guess what? We can quibble about whether or not we'd rather have, disastrous oil spills, miles off the coast or X hundred feet off the coast to get tiny drops of oil that could never make a difference in terms of the price of gas for us, but can make a catastrophic difference for the fisher folks, for the shrimpers, for any other economy that's actually working for us. Or we can start saying, guess what? This is the time to pass a climate bill, an energy bill. Let's put the price of this stuff up front so we can deal with it rationally. Let's begin to move and start home growing our energy. We need made in America energy here for America. That's wind. That's solar. That's the smart grid. That's smart batteries. That's where we need to be going.
Van, you're doing a Real Time with Bill Maher on HBO tonight.
It's true.
You have some zingers you'd like to try out on us?
I'll save them up, but I appreciate the plug for the book, The Green Collar Economy, and for the show tonight.
Van, we are always terrific. Thanks so much for taking time for us, as always.
All right. Well, glad to be here. We'll talk again soon.
All right. There he goes. Van Jones, former Green Jobs Advisor in the Obama White House.
That's right.
Can I just tell you one visual thing, even though this is radio?
What?
Can I just tell you that everyone has hair here exactly like Joe Wilson? There must be an ambassador barbershop
I'm sure
that gives you ambassador hair.
I'd like the Wilson, please.
I think he created
I don't mean
it.
The volleyball.
I just got a message from Charlie Pierce, and he said, what in the name of God is Mama doing at the UN? Do they have a wine bar?
That's how they got me here, and they lied to me.
That's right.
46 minutes.
I hope Ben Jones has a quip ready for Bill when he accuses him of being a 9/11 conspiracy theorist.
Sure that will come up.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. 46 minutes after the hour.
Smacks him upside the head.
Right back with our remaining moments live from the UN. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
A mecca of misdemeanors.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
It's a beautiful day. Sky falls, you feel like it's a beautiful day. So let it get away.
It's a beautiful day to fly to Asheville, North Carolina, where Mama will be going later today. I will be meeting and greeting the listeners.
That's
down
right.
In Asheville. By the way, Von Seal writes, good morning. Wanted to warn Steph the weather in Asheville this weekend will be humid and rainy, so perhaps you'll want to pack one of those Japanese girls to help with straightening her hair, because I'm pretty sure we don't have any of those here. Thank you, Von Seal, for the tip. It'll be humid with lots of Republican relatives. That's the forecast for Mama this weekend. All right, we are live at the United Nations, and I am joined now by someone who is way overqualified to be on this show once again, Dr. Robert Orr, who is, among other things, you will lead the Secretary General's agenda on climate change.
Indeed.
That's a lot of book learning, Doctor.
No, this is not book learning. This is real world learning, I'm afraid.
Obviously we're in the midst of just a huge environmental disaster here. What is your take on what's going on in the Gulf?
Well, clearly what's going on in the Gulf is a first-class environmental disaster, but it really speaks to a much larger reality, which is the global hunger for energy right now. We're going to the furthest corners of the globe to find energy, and it's because the global economy requires it. And I think we're going to see more and more of these kind of challenges, not just in our own backyard, but all over the world, because the energy is getting harder and harder to find.
Right. You know, it's so funny. As you probably know, like everything gets politicized here. It seems to me climate change is just so well documented that there is no dispute. But of course, as you know, here in the States, in Republican circles, there are still climate change deniers. How do you deal with that when you feel like the rest of the world has moved forward on that?
The honest truth is that debate is over. There may be still some people trying to raise some issues, but the facts are out there. The global scientific community, not just in this country, but all over the world, knows that climate change is a fact, and that in fact we and our behavior as human beings is accelerating it. I think the really interesting part is not the question of is there or is there not climate change. It's just how fast do we have to act to save ourselves.
Doctor, do you ever turn on Fox News?
Absolutely.
Just out of curiosity.
I do.
Do you see when they cite scientists who very often are the two scientists that perhaps work for ExxonMobil that... I mean, ironic in the midst of this oil crisis, right? These are the guys they cite as disputing climate change.
We all know how the world works, and people like to find people that agree with them and then cite them as, authorities on the matter. The fact is the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change has over 2,000 of the world's top scientists that review all of the scientific literature in the world. And the report that they came out with 2 years ago was very definitive on this. And it has been, in fact, if anything, proven to be an underplaying of the severity of the issue.
Do you just watch Fox News to have your blood pressure go up? Because we do a feature here called Right Wing World where we play sound bites from Fox News. And did you watch this winter, like whenever there's snow in the winter on the East Coast, Sean Hannity and people like that say, then they make jokes about how there's no global warming?
Yeah, I have to say, it's not just to raise my blood pressure. We really do need to know what everyone's thinking in the world. And I mean everyone.
Sean Hannity and thinking, that's not really never been used in the same sentence, I don't think.
Well, but on the building igloos on the Capitol steps and the like, talking about, you know, climate change, it snowed today, therefore it's clearly, you know, not getting hotter. I'm not sure it requires a whole lot of analysis to figure out what's wrong with that argument, but it just shows that, you know, politics are all still local and everyone's playing to their base. And the fact is that if we all keep playing to our base, this problem's going to keep getting worse and worse, and we're going to lose jobs, we're going to lose lives, and quite frankly, this world isn't going to be a very pleasant place to live in a couple decades if we keep it up.
Yeah. What can you do to change hearts and minds? I mean, you know, well, like you say, when you feel like the debate is over, and yet some people are still debating, you know.
Well, I think there are two things we have to do. One,
I think anyone that's ever been married knows how that is, when you think the argument's over, but then one person's not done arguing. It's
as a married man, I'm not going to comment on that. I think the bottom line is there are two things we need to do. We need real global leadership on this issue, and that doesn't just come from world leaders. That's not just from presidents and prime ministers, though we need it to start there. The problem with addressing climate change has been we've tried to handle this as just an environmental issue, but it's not just an environmental issue. It's an economic issue extraordinaire. It is a transportation issue, an agriculture issue, a finance issue. You just run down the list. So unless we have our leaders actually dealing with the issue, you won't be able to tailor solutions that can address the problems. The second level that we really have not gotten to as much as we need to is real common people. Behavior has to change all over the world if we're going to be able to make the planet sustainable.
Well, this Gulf spill is certainly compelling visual evidence of that we've got to break our addiction.
And the issue, I think, of addiction, it's a good word to use. We are addicted to oil and very 20th, 19th, 18th century fossil fuels. The options today in the 21st century for new kinds of energy are immense, and this is not necessarily a niche set of opportunities. These are things that, if you start looking at the options, could really power us into the new century. And this is a global competition right now. Countries all over the world
are
racing.
Oh, now you're talking America's language. If it's something we can win at.
Well, this is something that I think even those on Fox News better pay attention to, because if the United States continues to kind of look backwards and look for old sources of energy as the future, we're going to end up looking at a long parade in front of us.
All right. Doctor, we really appreciate your time, and you seriously are so overqualified to be on the show, you have no idea. Thank God you've never heard it. Dr. Robert Orr.
How do you know I've never heard it, Stephanie? Be careful.
All right. On the Secretary General's agenda on climate change, he's in charge of that and all kinds of other fancy stuff. Thank you so much, Doctor.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. All right. So we have a little fluffy celebrity stack to finish.
We only have 10 seconds of the show left.
Well, then I guess I'll just say goodbye and see you in Asheville, North Carolina, and see you Monday on the Stephanie Miller Show.